Welcome back to another episode of The Occasionalists. Matt Pagel here, once again flying the ship solo as we continue our current topics week in our very last week of The Occasionalist Daily. Really excited to shouldn't say that. I'm not excited to jump into this particular topic, but recent events really did kind of spurn on an interest, a very significant interest in a topic that I didn't know, that I knew a lot about. Let's put it this way. I knew a lot about, but I didn't realize the expansive history of this particular topic. So this was definitely a very interesting sort of research and deep dive into some of the more interesting facts about this. But I will say, I'm not going to drag down the beginning of this episode with too much history, simply because there's actually so much of it. And probably should introduce exactly what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the U.S. infrastructure. The very frightening and tragic collision on the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore with the massive freighter, I guess that's what they call them. That collision that completely collapsed the bridge, looked like a scene out of a movie almost, and obviously cost six men their lives, construction people who were working on the bridge at the time, got me thinking about U.S. infrastructure. And while this particular bridge incident wasn't specifically an infrastructure failure, there are infrastructure failures across the United States, unfolding every single day, slowly but surely. There is a bridge somewhere right now in the United States, probably multiple bridges right now in the United States, that are on the verge of collapsing because of poor design, poor maintenance, whatever. So this event just got me thinking about the U.S. infrastructure and really, truly how upsetting it would be for how upsetting it is when you really think about how the things that we utilize every single day, the terrible condition that they're actually in. All right. And you know, start off with here, you know, the American infrastructure is a complete joke. We are the richest country in the world, and we have some of the worst rated utilities and infrastructure and pieces of infrastructure literally in the entire world. And now I know that there's a caveat to this, that when you are a country that is physically as large as the United States and also as populous as the United States, you know, the U.S. is one of the biggest and also one of the biggest in terms of its actual physical size, geographic size, and also one of the biggest in terms of its population, right? It is significantly bigger than most countries in both those respects, and that does complicate infrastructure and infrastructure maintenance. However, as you will see, the ongoing issues with the American infrastructure go back to literally before some states even existed. And it wasn't just because, and these things weren't just because of, of bad luck, of, you know, natural disasters. These were things that were due to negligence, that were due to, cutting corners to save costs. This is really one of the things about construction in the United States that it's a hallmark, it's a cornerstone of construction in the United States, are people skipping necessary steps to make sure that their profit margins are higher. Instead of going for safety, they go for dollars. Instead of building the extra truss on a bridge, or making sure that the supports are correct, whatever it is, the American construction has this long and bad history of skipping many steps to make sure that projects are completed under budget, on time, and so that the profit margins are as high as possible. So it's not just, you know, that's why, again, I'm kind of wiping out the, not really including the recent bridge disaster in Baltimore, because that truly was an accident, right? When a boat hits a bridge, that is truly an accident. And there's some other accidents like that, you know, car crashes and things that have caused bridge collapses and stuff like that. And I'm not just going to focus on bridge collapses. There's more to this, but bridge collapses are very, very one of those things that happens that are very sudden, violent, and kind of a very emblematic of the infrastructure problems the United States has had for a long, long time, and I mean a long, long time. So I'm going to get into that first, the bridge collapse history, and how it extends back to literally as soon as there were things to make bridges for and people that could make them, we began having bridge collapses. So let's wind it back to the first notable bridge collapse in the United States. And this is, this is not including things like pedestrian footbridges and stuff that I'm sure were built, well before this that had collapsed previously. This is thinking more along the lines of bridges that were built to handle more than foot traffic. So in this case, it would have been horses and buggies and things in addition to people, right? And also thinking more along the lines of like what would become more of a modern style bridge versus what footbridges would have been, in earlier in the 1800s and 1700s. So we're going to start off in 1854. Again, this is the first notable bridge collapse in the United States. The Wheeling Suspension Bridge in Wheeling, West Virginia, although at that point in time it was just Virginia. The suspension, and this is not a design flaw necessarily. A design flaw, I suppose you could call it a design flaw, excuse me, a design flaw in the fact that they weren't accounting for winds this particularly high, but this was more of a freak incident, I suppose, is the way to put it. But the suspension bridge collapses due to the excessive torsion caused by unusually high winds. No one was killed. Obviously, it wasn't like it was at this point in time in the United States. It's not like there is a ton of horse and buggy traffic necessarily, but there would have been enough. But also, I'm also assuming that at this point in time, you would have seen this bridge swaying quite violently, and would have, in fact, not opted to just avoid using that bridge or waited until things calmed down. So, 1854, Wheeling, West Virginia, or what is now Wheeling, West Virginia, suspension bridge, the Wheeling suspension bridge collapses due to high winds. So let's just fast forward 1 year later. To what is truly our first bridge collapse disaster. And this is the Gasconade Bridge in Missouri, 1855. And this is due to a combination of things. Both of them, however, are human error or human oversight. So this was like it was like a big kind of spectacle where I feel like some of the people that died were like the original founders of St. Louis. Who died in this who died in Gasconade, Missouri during this incident. But the two things that were human oversight, it's a rail bridge, by the way. And the train that was going over it was determined to have been speeding excessively, had excessive speed. The locomotive operator said he was only going 5 miles an hour, but some people say it was more like 15, like triple the what would have been the safe speed for this like bank. But more importantly, additional, which that's what caused the train to move and move and shake the bridge, this bridge in an unsafe manner. But more importantly, additional investigations found that many of the support trusses were spaced too far apart, which translates essentially into they just left some out, which sounds like it, this sounds like it would have been a cost saving measure, right? Because it's not just the wood and metal necessary to support such a bridge, but also the concrete for footers. There's a lot that goes into building these things. And they found that these support trusses were just way too far apart to support a train's weight moving the force of a train moving on top of it. And anyway, this incident, again, the Gasconade Bridge collapse in Gasconade, Missouri, 1855, led to killed 31 people and injured hundreds and hundreds more who were there for this sort of this bridge opening and spectacle. All right, we're going to fast forward a few more years here to the Truesdell Bridge disaster in Dixon, Illinois, 1873. This is a particularly unique one in that it's not a pedestrian bridge. It is a bridge designed to handle both horse and buggy and pedestrian traffic. It's a big stone. It's actually like a big stone and wood and metal bridge. But it had a critical design flaw. And when a large crowd gathered for a baptism ceremony in the Rock River, too many people were leaning on, were packed to one side of the bridge. The bridge essentially tipped one way and then caused the support beams to then buckle inward. Killed 46 people, injured another 56, as all of these people that were on the bridge plunged into the river onto the people that were there for the baptism ceremony. But it was a bridge that could not handle the sheer weight of all the people on one side of it. Sounds like it was a disaster waiting to happen. So be it people, be it horse and buggy, a bridge that collapses inward after being tipped to one side does not sound like a safe bridge. And this was, again, the Truesdell Bridge disaster in Dixon, Illinois, 1873. So let's get it closer to my neck of the woods. And one of the truly awful early disasters. This is the Ashtabula River Railroad Bridge disaster of 1876. And this thing was doomed from the start. This bridge was only 13 years old when it collapsed. And I say that this is very important because I think a lot of the things that we think about when we think about infrastructure issues is the age of things, right? And that certainly is definitely a problem, as we'll kind of cover a little bit later here. But this bridge was only 13 years old. The thing that concerns me about the American infrastructure, as I had to mention previously, is that there is a long, long history of just cutting corners in construction. Some of them, the corners cut don't have any effect for a very long time. But here, all of the corners cut had an effect within just over a decade. The bridge itself was poorly constructed. It was not built well because they were cutting corners on how to put it together. They wanted to get it up as quickly as possible. And they did. They got it up very, very quickly. It was also based on an improper design for this type of railroad bridge. So in other words, it's sort of like, if you just, for example here, that kind of this, I think this analogy kind of works. If you were a moving company, could you use a couple of, Chevy Cavaliers or Ford Fiestas to move furniture and things? Yeah, you could, but those certainly aren't the appropriate vehicles that you'd want to use if you were a moving company. You'd want to use, at the very least, a pickup truck, probably something more like a box truck, right? That would be an appropriate thing here. Well, this bridge was not an appropriate bridge design for a railroad bridge. And then on top of that, the people that were in charge of maintenance rarely inspected this bridge. Again, this bridge is only 13 years old, and this thing had a total and complete failure and collapse when a train went over it in 1876. It completely collapsed. 92 were killed. I think at least 100 more were injured. Basically, everyone on the train died in a pretty horrific high-impact fiery event. This was the worst rail disaster in the U.S., at this point, it would be for about another 50 years before there was a bigger and more disastrous railway incident. And I think it was like in the mid-1920s. All right, we're going to fast forward to more modern times here and talk about the Tacoma Narrows Bridge in 1940 in Tacoma, Washington. And this is one of the most famous video clips of the 20th century. It's the one with the undulating bridge that just is bobbing up and down like crazy. It almost looks like it's water, basically. But this was this bridge was in service for a while before it collapsed. So much so that the people in Tacoma nicknamed it Galloping Gertie. I can't remember. It wasn't in service long, obviously, but the key structural failure was that the bridge didn't allow. It had like a solid. It had like a solid side and bottom that kind of acted like a sail for wind. That so instead of letting the wind pass through, it would catch and it would twist it from side to side. And on occasion, you know, the one that caused it to collapse is obviously the worst. But on occasion, there would be some fairly big undulations that would hit this bridge until the one that we have on video where the bridge is truly being shaken very, very violently. However, I just wanted to point this one out because, again, this is a failure. This is a human failure. This is an engineering failure, a design failure that caused this bridge that was not very old to collapse. Fortunately, there was no human fatalities. The only fatality, and this is kind of sad, but in the video you see this one car sitting on the bridge, and inside that car is a three-legged dog named Tubby, a little cocker spaniel, I think, that the owner, when he abandoned his car after the high winds picked up, he was unable to get back to the car to save Tubby. So Tubby the dog is the only fatality of the Tacoma Narrows Bridge collapse. But it truly, because of the video that we have of it, it really stands, again, as an emblem of what terrible design can do to any piece of infrastructure. But certainly, you know, again, bridge collapses being the most famous thing. And this is like such a testament to what bad design means for a bridge. Now let's go to another very kind of famous bridge in pop culture, more so in pop culture than Tacoma Narrows Bridge. Talking about the Silver Bridge in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Going back to West Virginia again. Point Pleasant, West Virginia in 1967. This is one of the most famous modern bridge disasters because of the folklore that has developed around it since the bridge collapse. For those of you who are familiar with this, like I am, this is the event that was preceded by the mysterious Mothman sightings. And in fact, in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, every year there's a Mothman convention. There's actually a not bad movie called The Mothman Prophecies about this figure that the people in Point Pleasant, West Virginia were seeing in the weeks and months prior to the bridge collapsing. And I think some of this is was kind of tied together later for the, you know, kind of the eerie coincidences sake. However, truly people were seeing something in the weeks and months preceding this bridge collapse. One horrific event that got later tied together, or at least was, you know, in theory there's a direct tie to this then major pop culture phenomenon at the time. You know, just these two things that have become inseparable from one another. But but when you get down to it, the issue in Point Pleasant of the Silver Bridge, it was poorly maintained. It rarely got inspected. Had it been inspected regularly, they would have seen I believe it was in the trusses or the footers for the trusses, significant cracks in the concrete, and which were caused because the bridge was not able to handle the daily traffic. I can't remember how old the bridge was. I don't want to pull this up right now to look it up right now. But the bridge was a little bit older, and it was not designed to handle, which is the problem that we see with a lot of our bridges now. But it was not made to handle the amount of traffic it was getting, and thus it eventually collapsed. 46 people were killed. I think they never recovered two people from this incident. They were washed away in the river and just, you know, never found again. So that's the Silver Bridge, Point Pleasant, West Virginia, 1967. And this was, so again, these were bridges for the most part that collapsed because of human error, human design flaws. You know, we were responsible for them collapsing. We were responsible for not building something the way it should have been built. It was our fault. And, you know, these are just a sampling of the things, a sampling of the bridge issues from the bridge collapses. I didn't even include some of the bridges that are facing problems currently. I didn't even include bridges that haven't been, that haven't fallen down, but are, have been pushed, that that do have major structural issues, that have been pushed beyond their lifespans, that have been pushed beyond their traffic capacities, you know, or ones that were closed before a disaster unfolded. I didn't even include any of those. And there's like hundreds of those that have happened that, that meet that qualification in the United States. Hundreds. I'll just give you like a quick sampling here. Two of the most famous, more recently, 2022, in 2022 in Memphis, the Hernando de Soto Bridge in Memphis is shut down for, I think it was like 4 months, after a massive crack in one of the support beams was discovered. And by crack, I'm not even really, the beam was separated, right? Like, you could look at it and a human being, if they were close, if they could get up next to it, could stick their arm through the crack that was separating this massive beam in the DeSoto Bridge. And here's the kicker, and here's where, so the bridge cracks, right? Like, okay, that could be a design flaw. That could be, you know, probably more than likely design. Probably more than likely, it was a traffic issue. The DeSoto Bridge connects Memphis and Tennessee to Arkansas, and it's a very heavily traveled bridge. So it was probably an issue of traffic. You know, the bridge being built before that much bridge being built in an era before you know, our modern traffic era was more than likely one of the issues, but probably the main issue. However, here's the bigger issue to me, and what I have been harping on now for several minutes. The massive crack was quote-unquote discovered in 2022. However, an amateur photographer and a regular kayaker that kayaks underneath the I can't remember, it's not the Mississippi, I think it might be like the Arkansas River, right? Oh gosh, anyway, it doesn't really matter. Amateur kayaker would go kayaking and take photos of, you know, all the places he was kayaking up and down the river. He has a photo from 2016 that shows that same massive crack in a side beam, in that same side beam. So that crack existed at least 6 years prior to it, quote unquote, being discovered, which means that in all those years that crews have been doing maintenance and repainting and, you know, whatever else, any other checks, no one had ever noticed a crack that literally was separating one of the main support beams completely. No one noticed it. And that's the issue, right? That the maintenance crews, the inspection crews, for some reason, be it negligence or poor training or whatever it was, my guess is they just didn't do their full inspections that they're supposed to do because, well, if, you know, think about it this way. If one of the main beams had a giant crack in it, the bridge should fall down, right? Well, it didn't. And yet it still did. So 6 years, this giant crack just went unheeded until I think someone operating a barge on the river actually called it in, obviously then this got fixed, but took several months for it to finally get fixed. And then again, closer to home for me, the Brent Spence Bridge in Cincinnati. I'm gonna pull up an excerpt here real quick. But the Brent Spence Bridge in Cincinnati in 2016 was named by The Hill as the number one infrastructure emergency in the United States. And this was due to safety and also the economic impact of this bridge. If you're unfamiliar, the Brent Spence Bridge connects Cincinnati and Kentucky, and it's right along. It's connecting, the highways it connects is 75, which runs literally from Michigan down to Florida. So this is a major economic vein running through the Midwest of the United States all the way down to the Southeast. But just a quick excerpt here. In addition to overcrowding and congestion, there are mounting concerns about the safety of the bridge after chunks of concrete fell from the upper deck onto the lower deck. And sorry, I'm going to break the quotation here right now. One time when I was on the Brent Spence Bridge, I saw a big chunk of metal fall off of it. Back to the article here. Statistics also show that drivers are 3 to 5 times more likely to have a wreck along the corridor. Some transportation planners are calling on officials not only to rehabilitate the bridge, but to construct a new one alongside of it. Every year of delay in the start of construction costs the taxpayers nearly $75 million per year in inflation, and this is according to the Ohio Department of Transportation. So this bridge is a known, and they have done work on it since this article came out, but this bridge was long known as both a dangerous bridge, and not only that, it just looks like, the thing I can tell you from driving over it multiple times in my life, the thing looks like shit. It does not look safe. And if something like that, if that bridge were to collapse one day, it would cause a traffic nightmare, a travel nightmare, an economic nightmare, as pointed out. It would be a nightmare if that bridge were to go out. And yet it's, again, I know they've made strides in making that bridge safer and better, but it is still the same. As far as I know, it's still the same width, which means it still is not big enough to handle the amount of traffic that goes over it, which is a lot. A lot of traffic goes over the Spence Bridge. So it's still not up to code in that regard, which means that the same problems are going to reappear. Despite any kind of improvements that they might make on it. Now, again, the most recent disaster wasn't, at least as far as we know now. Maybe we'll discover that this bridge was going to fall down anyway. But it doesn't seem like it. It does seem like this is purely an accident. However, bridges being struck by boats is far more common than you think, especially when it comes to these complete collapses. In more recent history, I counted at least 14 bridge collapse incidents where a large boat struck some part of the bridge. This goes all the way back to 1905, the Portage Canal Swing Bridge, 1972, the Sidney Lanier Bridge, one of the more famous incidents here, the Sunshine Skyway Bridge in 1980 in St. Petersburg, the Big Bayou Cannot Rail Bridge in 1993, the Queen Isabella Causeway incident in 2001, and the very famous one, the I-40 bridge in Oklahoma in 2002. So, again, this particular boat, I think it's called the Dolly, this boat struck another bridge a few years ago. This is very, very common in terms of these type of boat accidents, these freighter accidents. This is common. And it kind of makes sense, right? Like, we are trying to get ports, these port cities, they can't, in terms of trying to get traffic efficiently across cities that have major waterways going right through them, you have to build a bridge to get over the water. Otherwise, it would take you, who knows, and who knows what the traffic situation is going to be like in the Mid-Atlantic now because of this issue. But, it would take, my guess is that a city like Baltimore, if you didn't have those bridges spanning the rivers and the bay there in Baltimore, it would take you an hour to get anywhere driving around it. So it's not, it to me, it's not surprising, it's not shocking that we have these things happening in these port cities. But, maybe there is more to it in terms of the way the bridges were designed, their location. Certainly, a lot of these bridges were designed when you think about, like, the, I can't remember how old the Francis Scott Key Bridge is now, but some of these bridges are 40, 50, 60 years old. I'm not even talking about, like, the fact that they're crumbling. I just mean that, like, they were built before these super freighters began filling up our waterways, right? Like, there's always been big boats, but these boats now, like, there are boats literally that are bigger than the Titanic that can maneuver through the Cuyahoga River. Boats are gigantic now. And maybe that's a part of it too, right? That these bridges themselves, that these waterways themselves were not, the things that are around them were not built to accommodate boats this large, but we're going to shove them through there anyway. Who knows? This is something that's a topic 100% for certain that some kind of bridge or shipping expert might be able to tell you. But I can tell you for certain that if you live in a port city, pretty much sometime in your lifetime, a boat, be it bigger, you know, the size of the dolly or smaller, a boat is going to collide with a bridge that is in your port city. Almost going to guarantee that it will happen in your lifetime. All right, but there is some good news here. The American Infrastructure Report Card really lays it out in a really great way here, that America earns an A+ in terms of its infrastructure rate. Oh, I'm sorry. That's Germany that earns an A in its infrastructure rankings, on its infrastructure report card, I should say. Let's see, hold on. What does America get again? Oh, a C- is what America's infrastructure report card says. Tell me how great C- went over with your parents when you got a report card. Well, that's pretty much what the United States has gotten every year that there has been an infrastructure report card. The United States has pretty much consistently gotten a C or a C-. And again, I know the caveats here about the size of the country and the population, but there are other countries with high population, with high populations and that are fairly big, that do not have anywhere near the same issues that we're having. So the United States, C- on its report card, and this is our reporting. This is the reporting from the United States, that we are getting a C-. And if you consult there are various ways to look at these infrastructure rankings and reports. So it kind of depends on what you look at. Like, you could look at one where there's one from, I think it was from Statista, where it looked at it didn't actually rate and grade certain pieces of infrastructure. Instead, it looked at the citizens' opinion on the country's infrastructure. And on that, you had Singapore ranked number one, which makes perfect sense. If anyone's ever been to Singapore, it's like one of the cleanest, most well-maintained cities in the entire planet. Obviously, don't break the law there. They come down rather harshly on you. But it's not shocking that Singapore would rank very highly in this regard. But it is actually shocking how lowly the U.S. ranked, somewhere like in the low 20s, or I should say the high 20s, possibly low 30s. I can't remember exactly. And this was based off of the citizen opinion of the infrastructure and the quality of the infrastructure. So that's like one metric. But in terms of like the rankings, in terms of things like safety, the money spent maintaining things, new infrastructure, that kind of collective ranking. The United States, and again, it depends on where you look at this, the United States, generally speaking, ranks somewhere between 5th and 15th worldwide in these infrastructure rankings. So, 5th, pretty high. But again, it's being beaten out by countries in terms of like the top five. It's being beaten out by Germany, by our neighbors to the north, Canada, Japan, Sweden, Singapore. These are all usually ahead of the U.S. in these rankings. And when you do kind of expand it and look at other infrastructure rankings and ways to kind of, different ways to skin this particular cat, the U.S. still falls farther behind other countries like the Emirates, like the Netherlands, like Switzerland. It falls behind those countries as well. And again, it's just, to me, it's kind of embarrassing that a country that, claims to have so much great innovation and so many great minds, and it does, this country does, but inside we are letting simple things just completely crumble, which I'm going to give you just a brief taste of here in a second. I'm going to give you the quick overview of the categories that they that they list here as being infrastructure categories, right? And the accompanying grade that they all get. There's one without a grade here. There's 18 categories. There's one without a grade because I think it's not. I don't think it's graded the same way as the other pieces of infrastructure. So we'll just, this will be real quick, I promise. So aviation infrastructure gets a D+. Bridges get a C. Dams get a D. There is, like I said, there's no grade for broadband for internet access, so not going to worry about that. Drinking water, C-. Energy, C-. Hazardous waste handling, D+. Inland waterways, D+. Levees, D. Public parks, D+. Ports, and this is surprising, ports, B-. Railways, B. Roads, the thing that you and I drive on every day, D. Schools, the things that most of our kids go to every single day, D+. Solid waste, C+. Stormwater, D. Transit, not shockingly, D-. Wastewater, D+. So for all of you counting at home, only two of these 18 categories, I should say 17, leaving broadband out of it, only two of these 17 categories scored in the B range, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 of the 17 infrastructure categories by which this group puts together the report card were a D or worse. So, you know, I don't know how you're feeling about your roads or your bridges right now, but it certainly is not a little bit of a grim kind of report card there. So let's just real quickly, I'm going to give you the overview of the issue with bridges here, according to this report card. So there are more than 617,000 bridges across the 617,000 bridges across the United States. Currently, 42% of all bridges are at least 50 years old. And 46,154, or 7.5% of the nation's bridges, are considered structurally deficient, meaning that they are in poor condition. Unfortunately, 178 million trips are taken across these structurally deficient bridges every day. Every day, 178 million trips are being taken across structurally deficient bridges. That is absolutely and completely outrageous. The good news here is there is good news here. As bridges are aging, however, the number of structurally deficient bridges has declined over recent years. So that's good. That means that we are actually doing something about this piece of infrastructure. However, the problem being is that a lot of these construction projects that can address structurally deficient bridges, a lot of the construction has slowed in recent years, and it's because there is a huge backlog and there is a need for a lot of money. We are not really anywhere close to the amount of billions of dollars that we need to actually fix these bridges. But I'm sure if Trump gets reelected, he'll address all that in his next infrastructure week. Let's talk about our drinking water, which is fairly important, I think. So our nation's drinking water infrastructure system is made up of 2.2 million miles of underground pipes. Unfortunately, the system is aging and underfunded. There is a water main break every 2 minutes. Every 2 minutes, there's a water main break, and an estimated 6 billion gallons of treated water are lost each day in the U.S., which is enough to fill 9,000 Olympic swimming pools. Again, this is something that has gotten better in recent years, but the urging of the thing that has forced this to get better are these high-profile incidents like the Flint water crisis, with the lead pipes literally poisoning thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And this is echoed throughout, especially older cities in the United States. This has been a problem, but it did take something significantly major like that to sort of now spurn and get progress and get movement towards pipe replacement. There's a quick statistic here that in 2020, more than 12,000 miles of water pipes were on the docket to be replaced by drinking water utilities. So probably not sure how exactly if they got all 12,000 of that plan done, but at least there was a plan in place to replace this. And the funding for this has gone up. There are newer drinking water treatment plants and things like that. There is an increased attention being paid to our drinking water. And again, part of that is because of the disasters like in Flint that are frankly still ongoing. And it's an issue that a lot of older cities have to deal with. The lead pipes that we didn't really think about, maybe they did think about it. And the risk cost assessment at the time was one that favored just going ahead and putting in lead pipes throughout all these major cities. Let's move on to roads here, the quick overview out of America's roads. These vital lifelines are frequently underfunded, and over 40% of the road system is now in poor or mediocre condition. As the backlog of rehabilitation needs grows, motorists are forced to pay over $1,000 every year in wasted time and fuel. Now, while traffic fatalities have been on the decline, over 36,000 people still die on the nation's roads every year, and the number of pedestrian fatalities is rising. So that is the brief overview of our roads. 40% of the road system in the United States is in poor, mediocre condition. And I can tell you what, living in Ohio, I can feel that. That's for sure. Northeast Ohio especially is we get a lot of the weather's consistent. It's cold in the winter, it's hot in the summer, but even within our seasons, we have a lot of very temperature ups and downs, heavy snow, heavy rain that really contributes to making the roadways difficult to maintain here. It shows. It absolutely shows. But I'll tell you what, we are in better shape than Michigan. And I say that because you're rolling down 75 heading either to Michigan from Ohio or from Michigan to Ohio, you notice immediately the change in the condition of the roads and the change in the condition of 75. In Ohio, it is much smoother. And in Michigan, it's like you're driving in a fucking minefield. But that is the reality for a lot of places. The roadways, as long as they are not actively killing people, that's really when major roadways get repaired, when the accident rate begins to climb and deaths begin to climb. If roadways are in good enough shape that a municipality can just pass the cost off to the drivers, the consumers in this case, to fix their own cars and whatever, they'll just let it go for as long as they can. It's 40% of our roadways are in poor or mediocre condition. Fantastic. And we'll wrap up with schools here. And this is one of the ones that is truly most disturbing to me, having teachers for parents who taught for a long time. Once upon a time, I wanted to be a teacher. Really glad that didn't happen. I would have punched a kid early on in my tenure. But the nation's schools are in rough shape here. And I'll give you this overview again from this report card. School facilities represent the second largest sector of public infrastructure spending after highways. Yet there is no comprehensive national data source on K-12 public school infrastructure. What data is available indicates that 53% of public schools report the need to update or replace multiple building systems, including HVAC systems. Once upon a time, when I was in middle school, our middle school did not have Our middle school did not have air conditioning. It was an extremely old building, did not have air conditioning. Certain rooms had air conditioning. You know, they had like window units and stuff. We did not have air conditioning. And you cannot learn, or nor can you teach, when a school does not have air conditioning. It is impossible to get 20 to 30 hot, agitated students to pay attention to you. And I went to a school district that was very middle class comparative to other school districts even nearby. And the public school system, in especially in a lot of major cities, lacks both heating and air, lacks a lot of things that the more wealthy suburban school systems have, and it makes learning a nearly impossible task, basically. Continuing on here with this little overview. More than one third of public schools have portable buildings. Again, sidebar. Also went to class in a portable building due to capacity constraints, with 45% of these portable buildings in poor or fair condition. Meanwhile, as a share of the economy, state capital funding for schools was down 31% in the fiscal year 2017 compared to 2008. That is the equivalent of a $20 billion cut to our public school system. The best estimates indicate a minimum $38 billion in annual funding, the best estimates indicate a minimum of a $38 billion annual funding gap for public school facilities across the country. So, in other words, it's not just the amount spent, as I just mentioned there's a $20 billion cut over between the years 2008 and 2017. It's that the minimum standard, the minimum amount of money required to get schools up to sort of a minimum functioning level would be that we're falling every year $38 billion short. And you can check this whole report card out. If you just look up, just Google American Infrastructure Report Card, you can find all of this in greater detail. It's not all bad news. There are areas where we're making significant improvements, but for the most part, the powers that be, our governments, our state and local legislatures, have determined that certain things do not meet we're not on the right side of the cost-benefit analysis. It is not, the cost-benefit analysis to replacing a school's HVAC system, maybe an entire district's HVAC system, is too expensive. In the short and long term, but it doesn't make budgetary sense to have air-conditioned or heated rooms. It doesn't make fiscal sense to repair certain roads when you have to focus on, maybe the main thoroughfares, the main bloodlines of any particular city. It doesn't make sense to fix every road when you only need to fix the major roads. And that's the issue that we continuously run into, the lack of funding. And then, as I mentioned before, even when you do get appropriate funding, there is a very good chance that the people who built or repaired whatever part of the infrastructure you needed built or repaired skipped corners, skipped steps. It's likely the people that are in charge of overseeing it are not overseeing it as well as they should. And all of these, it's just this perfect fucking storm that has led to essentially the guts of the United States to just be rotting inside of the body. It's more than one presidential decree or executive order. It's more than one piece of legislature. It's more than one infrastructure week, even though I made that joke. It's more than one of those. It is a system that from top to bottom, from the federal level down to the local level, needs to prioritize these things. And unfortunately, they do not. Maybe at the local level, there's more, there's more emphasis on rebuilding schools and roads and making sure water is drinkable. But the higher up you go on that chain, the less and less these things matter. It's just that simple, I didn't even get into the railways, obviously, again, here in Ohio with the East Palestine railway disaster. There's seemingly a railway disaster every few years because that is another massive piece of failing infrastructure, our railways, even though they had actually a higher rating than stuff like our roads. But again, you know, making the joke about traveling between Michigan and Ohio, and no joke, it was a joke, but legitimately, there is a difference between the highway in Michigan and the highway in Ohio when you cross that threshold. But when you do travel on our roadways, I mean, you can see the condition that they're in. I can't tell you, and it's more than just like the potholes and things like that. There are dangerous roads that never get lights installed in them. The sight lines are terrible because, you know, they were built at a time when there just wasn't as much traffic. Cars didn't move as fast. And, you know, the idea of some of these cities handling modern traffic, like think about a city as old as New York or a city as old as Philadelphia. And while they've done a lot of modernization on their infrastructure and their, you know, transport grid, it still isn't up to speed for today's world. And it'll likely just keep falling farther behind as populations increase, as we're driving more, as we're driving different types of vehicles. It's likely that all this is just going, this gap is just going to get wider and wider and wider. Boy, that's two episodes in a row where I had like really gloomy kind of endings for you, but shit, I don't know what to tell you. Just be safe out there. Be aware of the roads that you're on. Be aware of your, you know, if the school you're sending your kid to every day is up to code. You know, this whole country is, you know, is great as the United States is, and I think it's our duty as United States citizens to point out the shortcomings of the country. I think that's true patriotism, to sort of enjoy your country but also see it for what it is. And this is one thing that is, the infrastructure is one thing that really is a threat to everyone, right? A poor infrastructure is a threat to everyone. Poor houses, poor roads, poor schools, poor water, poor waste treatment. All of this is a threat to us if it's not done well. And as you know, as surveyed by a lot of experts, the United States just doesn't do this very, very well. All right, so that's it. That is it for today's episode. And actually, that is it. I am wrapping up the current topics with this episode because I wanted to save room for a little wrap-up episode that'll be coming on Friday. So that is it for the current topics. That is basically it for the Occasionalist Daily. We are going to hit every single day that was available for an episode. We are going to hit every single one of them. So very, very happy that I was able to do that. But regardless, that's it. Happy Thursday, and we will see you on Friday.